hurricane season is underway. Forecasters are predicting a calm season, but experts warn people should start getting ready now in case a storm does hit. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. The Atlantic Hurricane Outlook from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says 2015 will be a below-normal season with 6 to 11 named storms. Of those storms, 3 to 6 could become hurricanes. But experts with NOAA warn that a below-normal season doesn't mean we are off the hook. On today's show, we're taking a look at how you can prepare if any storms do come our way. Something new this year for the beach communities of Pinellas County is the Barrier Island Reentry Program. Residents and business owners will now have to sign up for an emergency access permit if they want to be among the first to return after an evacuation. Florida Matters Mark Schreiner checked in with some folks at the beaches in Pinellas about this new rule, which creates an express lane for residents and business owners to get back out to the barrier islands after a hurricane.
At the end of Walsingham Road is the small community of Indian Rocks Beach. Homes and apartment complexes are interspersed with beachfront vacation rentals along the main drag of Gulf Boulevard. About a block and a half south of the Indian Rocks Causeway Bridge, a bakery and a surf shop sit squeezed between a pizza bar and a Mexican restaurant. Surrounded by surfboards and swimsuits, island shop owner Larry Garrison talks to a customer. Garrison's had the shop for 8 years, not long enough to have had to bug out for a hurricane, even though he knows what he'll do if one comes.
Biggest concerns would be the front windows are pretty vulnerable to breaking. We do board them up. There's a storm coming, but even that may not help prevent that. And also flooding, being that we're in a low, right on the beach.
Next door in Suite IRB, owner Melissa Dotson stands among glass display cases full of cakes and pies. She and her husband bought the store 2.5 years ago and opened the bakery last September. Hurricanes? They're not her biggest concern.
Well, I came from the Kansas City area, so I was used to tornadoes and things like that, so I'm more afraid of them than I am of the hurricanes.
Both store owners live nearby. Garrison is a few minutes over the bridge in Largo. Dotson is just 5 minutes north off of Gulf Boulevard. They know that if a hurricane comes, they'd likely have to leave their homes and workplaces behind and head further inland. But when the storm passes, both would be among the first allowed back in, thanks to a new program unveiled earlier this year by Pinellas County. Under the Barrier Island Reentry Program, people who live or work in Indian Rocks Beach and 11 other Gulfside communities stretching from Tierra Verde north to Clearwater sign up for an emergency access permit to hang on their car mirror. If there's a mandatory evacuation, and not just for a hurricane, but any event that forces a large-scale departure, pass holders will be allowed back in much quicker than those without a pass. Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri explained the rationale at a recent press conference.
The old way was that if you had a driver's license or you had something that identified you, somebody have to stop, you got to read it, you got to verify and make sure that they belong there, because we don't want people who don't belong in these communities.
The system is designed to keep looters and burglars out while also trying to ease reentry traffic congestion. Residents get 2 hang tag passes, while business owners can get more depending on the number of essential personnel they have. When they try to get through any of the 9 reentry points to the barrier islands, pass holders will be allowed into what's basically an express lane.
Everything's barcode on the hang tags, and the deputies would have scanners, and people would be able to very easily move through each of these checkpoints.
But the response hasn't been what Pinellas County emergency planners hoped for. Gualtieri estimates that there are about 88,000 people who would need permits, but as of the end of May, only 17,000 people have received them.
And that gives me a lot of concern, because what I know is going to happen is that if the event comes and we do have to evacuate and we have to get people back in, is they're going to complain. And they're going to be complaining because they can't get in or because they're going to be significantly delayed.
Dotson, who picked up her passes using her home address, says there are many reasons she's heard for the low response.
One of the comments that I heard was that We have to go get ours at City Hall. They're only open Monday through Friday. A lot of folks work in Tampa Monday through Friday because you can't mail them, and you have to have some proof of identification to get them. And I also think that a lot of people are still not aware that they need them.
That's despite what Gualtieri calls a concerted effort by the county to publicize the program through mailings and community events, everything short of going door to door. He adds that when a storm is on its way, that's not going to be the time to try to get a pass.
If they wait to that period of time, they're probably going to be out of luck. You know, it's just the way it is, and that's what people do, but shouldn't wait.
And avoiding the wait after the storm is exactly why people like Larry Garrison have already gotten their passes.
I hope they come in handy. I'll be waiting at the bridge before it opens to come back, I'm sure. So I'll hopefully be one of the first ones back on the island.
Mark Schreiner, WUSF 89.7 News.
In 1927, Tampa opened its new downtown hospital on the tip of Davis Islands. Back then, no one talked about the dangers of storm surge, but pass by the hospital today on a drive along Bayshore Boulevard and you may wonder just how the waterfront hospital can keep its patients and medical staff safe during a hurricane. With 1,000 beds and special units for transplant and burn patients, the facility infrastructure is designed to stay up and running before, during, and after a storm. As Florida Matters' Mary Shedden reports, disaster planning is a year-round discussion at Tampa General Hospital.
This is our central energy plant. If we were on the other side of the building, you'd be looking at the Tampa Convention Center and Harbor Island.
Paul Ducharme stands beneath Tampa General's electrical heartbeat. The facilities manager points up.
But if you'll notice, it's also elevated, so all of our critical infrastructure is above the floodplain.
Tampa General Hospital is set on land just 12 feet above sea level. On normal days, during high tide, water from the channels from Hillsborough Bay sometimes splash over the seawall. That's why you have to walk up 3 flights to the backup power.
These are our generators.
The 4 machines are massive, roughly 15 feet high, 50 feet long, and 10 feet wide each. And they're loud. 48,000-gallon diesel fuel tanks can keep the generators going for days if the neighborhood's power is cut off. Another floor with massive water chillers would provide clean drinking water and sanitary plumbing conditions for patients and staff. An alley is all that separates the energy plant and the main building at Tampa General. It sounds a world away. On the 5th floor, heart monitors and telephones are the loudest thing you'll hear. Ducharme says that's the point, especially during a storm.
The last thing I want on that patient's mind is their own personal safety. So everything should be completely transparent to that patient. If they need a drink of water, the water's there. If they need the temperature in their room regulated or changed in any way, that they're able to do that.
John Dunn is the hospital's director of communications. He's been at Tampa General long enough to remember its basement flooding during a tropical storm more than a decade ago. Now electrical controls are set on the upper floors to work separately from the lower flood-prone floors. And Dunn says each year the staff goes over a detailed plan of how and where to move patients. They discharge those who are well enough to go home. The others are taken into the most fortified parts of the building, away from the windows.
The idea is to move the patients up, down, and in, away from the walls.
This bunker mentality is intentional. Dunn says a hurricane bearing down on Tampa a decade ago taught the staff that evacuation isn't always the safest option.
When Hurricane Charlie was coming up the coast, we had more than 100 patients who were considered critically ill. A lot of them were on ventilators. We would have put them at greater risk trying to evacuate them than we would have if by keeping them here.
That year, Tampa General started revamping its disaster plan. The tragic efforts to evacuate patients from hospitals in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina shaped some of their decisions. Now, Dunn says every staff member is assigned to a hurricane team. Everyone is expected to work. He says before the storm hits, staff members go home and get their own things in order.
It's very important if you're asking staff to sit on the tip of an island during a hurricane that you have to make some accommodations for them. You know, and obviously we are here for patients, but by the same token, we understand everybody has families, they have their own homes, so we built in some accommodations for that as well.
Ducharme, the facilities manager, says Tampa General is already upgrading its backup system. A new electrical control center is being built, one floor above the existing generators.
Everything should be as normal as it can be for that patient.
Normal, that is, unless the patients and the staff take a look out the window. For Florida Matters, I'm Mary Shedden.
Getting ready for hurricanes can become more complicated if you have special medical needs, whether it's early prescription refills, figuring out how to keep a ventilator on, or keeping certain medications cold. Florida Matters producer Lottie Watts takes a look at the extra preparations for people who are managing chronic medical conditions.
Dr. Theo Tsai is a chief medical officer for health insurance company Humana. He's also lived through several hurricanes.
I remember the worst one for me was in the Bahamas, where I was on the first floor. It was a pretty bad hurricane, and Nassau typically floods a lot. Being there alone in the apartment by myself and basically not having access to anything, I mean, it kind of brings home the point that it is important to prepare.
It took that storm to get him to do things differently.
I used to say, why do people rush to the supermarkets when there's a storm coming? But after that, I used to be the first person in line, yeah, to make sure that I had everything ready.
Tsai is in charge of Humana's senior products in Central Florida. He says for people with chronic medical conditions, getting everything ready also means figuring out what to do if you have medical devices that you need to plug in or medications you need to keep cold.
If you stay at home and there is a loss of electricity, your refrigerator obviously cannot keep the temperatures that are required to make sure that your medication doesn't go to waste.
Since power outages can impact ventilators and other devices, Dr. Tsai recommends evacuating out of the area with friends or family, or registering for your county's special needs shelter. Keely Smith is the special needs shelter coordinator for Hillsborough County. Smith says people need to register in advance for the shelters.
Individuals would have to meet certain medical criteria in order to register. That would be individuals that require maybe assistance with medications, that are on electrically dependent equipment for their medical conditions, individuals on oxygen, or individuals that require daily assistance from nursing personnel.
Each Florida county has a registration form, available online or by calling the county health department or sheriff. Smith, with Hillsborough County, says pre-registration is key.
Individuals that are pre-registered for the program, they'll walk in, give the registration desk their name, and then get, you know, let right on into the shelter.
Even if you don't, Smith says you won't be turned away.
If you have not pre-registered, then you'll have to go through a triage process where the nurses will have to determine whether or not you qualify, and then you'll have to get registered and provide the registration desk all of your information. So pre-registration definitely makes the process of arriving at the shelter much easier.
And is there anything that you can think of that maybe isn't immediately obvious to people that they need to think about as they get ready?
Yeah, actually, one question that we get a lot is about medical records, and that's a very important thing. If you have medical records, you need to make sure you make copies of those. If you evacuate, make sure that they're in your emergency supplies that you take with you. If you come to a shelter, you need to make sure to bring those with you. People don't think about, you know, trying to recreate 80 years of medical history.
As part of any evacuation plan, whether you're going to a shelter or elsewhere, you need to make sure you bring your medications with you. Anyone who has tried to refill a prescription early knows it's usually pretty impossible. But Sylvia Smith of Disability Rights Florida says a state law passed in 2006 allows for early prescription refills under certain emergency circumstances.
If your county is under a hurricane warning or is part of a state of emergency in Florida by executive order of the governor, or your county has activated its emergency operations center, the insurance companies are required by Florida law to remove any barrier to you receiving an early refill for your medication.
Smith says that because of this law, her organization no longer gets complaints from people who say they had trouble getting an early prescription refill to put in their hurricane emergency kit. For Florida Matters, I'm Lottie Watts.
Coming up...
Look at your refrigerator. If we know that a bad storm is coming, if we have eggs, cook them. They're better off hard-boiled. If we have bacon, cook them off. You know, bacon could go into salads and soups and pastas and cook it while you still have electric to cook on or gas.
I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters. I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters, and we're taking a look at how to prepare in advance for a hurricane. Before the season even starts, emergency centers at counties across Florida test their ability to respond to hurricanes. Florida Matters' Michael S. Butler brings us this look at a mock hurricane exercise in Manatee County.
It's a sunny, breezy, and hot day in Bradenton, but Manatee County officials are preparing for a very different kind of day, one they hope never comes. Surrounded by cow pastures is a formidable-looking brown concrete two-story building. This is the Manatee County Public Safety Center, and it's the site of one of the area's sturdiest emergency operations centers. This event is a fictional Category 3 storm named Hurricane Gibson.
Fortunately, majority of the time during the year, the room that we're around, the Emergency Operations Center, sits very quiet. All the tables and chairs are empty.
That's Jerome Ruffing, training coordinator for Manatee County Emergency Medical Services.
But when an activation occurs, suddenly we have hundreds of people in here, sometimes for 72 hours or more.
The structure is more than 100,000 square feet of steel frame and reinforced concrete block. It is built to withstand 200 mile per hour wind speeds and has enough diesel fuel generators to power everything inside for 7 days. There are 18 different groups and agencies represented here: medical, energy, law enforcement, communications, and more. Each year, they practice how well they could deal not just with hurricanes, but with any disaster. Jennifer Bensey, administrator with the Florida Department of Health, Manatee County, talks about this yearly drill.
After 9/11, there was a lot of emphasis placed on what's known as all-hazards approach to preparedness. So making sure that any type of event, whether it's natural or man-made, we are able to address it and solve any problems that come our way.
During the next 3 hours, they'll have to cope with everything from highway and bridge closings to power outages to getting the sound just right to make announcements on radio and TV.
We'll be around, so continue to play, and thank you very much.
They even hold a mock press conference to practice informing the public.
Good afternoon. My name is Samantha Kennedy. I'm the lead public information officer. The next couple of people I'm going to introduce to you will be able to provide you with the latest information regarding current recovery efforts after Hurricane Gibson.
They also pitch their Code Red program, where residents can register for email, text, and Twitter notifications of emergencies and services. During the final hour, each emergency support function, or ESF, will check in to report any issues they had during the exercise.
ESF 6, Mass Care.
We had one problem, technical problem, that I think you already know about. But
it's a process they call a hot wash, where they critique their performance at each step in the drill. But when the day is over, these 150-plus people will go home to lights, air conditioning, and safe families, hoping the skills they practiced here won't be needed anytime soon. Michael S. Butler, WUSF 89.7 News.
When a storm is on its way, it can cause stress and anxiety for everyone, particularly children. Florida Matters' Susan Giles Wantuck explains how parents can talk to their children about hurricanes.
Little kids' ordinary fears may revolve around sleeping without a light on or monsters under their beds. But in Florida, hurricane season means it may be time to talk about expectations and preparations, especially since the Atlantic storm seasons have been so quiet for the past several years, which means children may not fully understand what a hurricane means. University of South Florida professor Dr. Judith Bryant specializes in child development.
Keep it simple. Follow the child's lead. Provide the information requested.
And if the child asks for more, give it with respect to that child's personality.
Everybody's been warned. It is time to hunker down. Hurricane Sandy is...
Bryant says if you have a very sensitive child or one that may get easily overwhelmed, try to minimize media exposure.
You don't want to overload them with constant information about impending weather events. You also want to try to keep a regular routine. Routine is very important for alleviating anxiety for anybody. And you try to keep your emotional state as calm as possible, because children read emotions from their parents, especially very young children.
You may even want to share Sesame Street's Hurricane Show with young children well before any storms come this way to help them understand.
Hi-ho! Kermit the Frog here with a fast-blowing news story. A hurricane could be heading towards Sesame Street. With more on this stormy weather, here's our weather person and bona fide meteorologist, Al Roker.
Thanks a lot, Kermit. Now, here's where the hurricane is right now. I've been watching it as it's gone from down there to all the way up here.
But what's a hurricane?
What is a hurricane?
A hurricane is a very, very big storm with lots and lots of wind and rain. And if it keeps moving in this direction, it could hit Sesame Street.
Oh, no! A hurricane!
And it's going to hit Sesame Street!
Calm down, everybody. Don't worry. Everyone just needs to prepare for the hurricane.
And if you ultimately end up in that waiting zone and are stuck at home in the hours before a hurricane comes, Bryant says it's important for the whole family to stay active and engaged. You could have the whole family lend a hand with storm preparations.
Getting water, filling jugs with water, filling the tub with water, or thinking, all right, what items might we need to take should we need to evacuate, to kind of understand what could happen and getting children involved in the preparations.
She says teenagers can help gather information about storm tracking and evacuation zones, but older kids should still be shielded from information overload. Most of all, keep talking to your children and keep a close eye on them for signs of stress.
For the younger children, it would be toileting problems, bedwetting, nightmares, changes in their eating habits, upset stomachs, and a lot of children will express that they're worried.
Bryant says be sure to talk to your children about any fears they're wrestling with. Try to stay calm yourself. And try to keep a routine in place around the house. Susan Giles, Wantuck, WUSF 89.7 News.
Canned tuna, boxed apple juice, peanut butter crackers. What's in your hurricane food supply of non-perishables? Emergency response experts suggest families have food and water to last 3 to 7 days. But who wants to eat 7 days of canned chili or beef jerky? There are options with a little planning ahead of time. Florida Matters' Bobby O'Brien headed to Locale Market in St. Petersburg to talk with co-owner Chef Don Pintabona, a nationally renowned chef who has cooked his way through natural disasters like Hurricane Sandy and man-made disasters like 9/11 in New York City.
Within 72 hours of the collapse of the World Trade Center towers, Chef Don Pintabona was dishing up hot meals to thousands of 9/11 rescue workers as leader of Operation Chefs with Spirit.
It was an amazing effort, but it kind of taught us all, you know, how important food is to everyone, not only for sustenance, but for your soul and your well-being.
Hurricane Andrew victims also got a taste of his generosity when Pintabona and 29 other chefs traveled to Miami to cook for a fundraiser. And most recently, he weathered Hurricane Sandy when it sideswiped New York City, cutting power to his part of town for more than 12 days.
Above 42nd Street, they were fine, so I'd have to walk 120 blocks to charge my phone every day. Actually, it became a party atmosphere. You know, I live in an apartment building with 100 apartments. I was there 6-7 years. I didn't know anybody until after the hurricane. And we all cooked outside. We all got to know each other. And we kind of bonded in a pretty cool way.
Did you have a hurricane supply put together prior to Sandy?
I did not. I said, no, that'll never happen in Manhattan.
A lesson learned. So Pintabona, now living in Florida, agreed to share some of his disaster preparation tips. Standing amid shelves of spices and condiments at his new venture, Locale Market in downtown St. Petersburg, Pintabona says something as simple as citrus can brighten a meal of canned food.
Keeping lemons and limes on hand, and of course you want them on hand for afterward if you want to have a couple of cocktails, but hot sauces, pestos, flavored oils, you know, anything to give a little bit of extra zest, a little lift to whatever canned goods and whatnot you might have on hand.
Such as canned proteins like beans, chicken, tuna, and salmon.
You know, dried fruit in general is a great thing to keep on hand. Apples, pears, cranberries, prunes, you know, just to have that on hand, great source of protein. And Chicken broth is a must. Yeah, things like coconut milk enhance the flavor, smooth out something. It's always good to keep that on hand.
Can you use coconut milk for cereal?
You certainly can.
The chef recommends choosing low-sodium canned goods because it's better for you, and you won't get as thirsty in case your water supply is limited.
What I recommend, too, look at your refrigerator. If we know that a bad storm is coming, if we have eggs, cook them. They're better off hard-boiled. If we have bacon, cook them off. Bacon could go into salads and soups and pastas, and cook it while you still have electric to cook on or gas.
Also, freeze as much food and bottled water as you can, and know that some items will be okay without refrigeration, like butter.
I love cheeses. If I'm going to stock up for a hurricane, I'm going to get cheeses that hold well at room temperature, like a Reggiano, things that can sit out.
Anything special for children?
Yeah, you know, children love mashed potatoes, for example. So if you got dehydrated potatoes, it's already got the milk. All you need to do is add hot water.
What kind of seasoning would you put in there to make them not taste quite so instant?
Well, it depends on the age of the kid. I mean, my kids don't like anything green speckled, so I wouldn't add any parsley to it.
Now, I understand you're going to make me a recipe, or?
Yes, a little cavatelli with sausage.
Cavatelli is his go-to comfort food that can be made ahead of time.
I'm going to use 2 pans.
Upstairs above the market in his restaurant's kitchen, under a large exhaust hood, Chef Pintabona heats up a couple of saucepans.
I've taken the sausage out of the casing. You can very easily move them in. Put the onions. We don't necessarily want to brown it.
To the onions, he adds frozen peas, one of his favorite ingredients. Pintabona dunks the fresh pasta shells in boiling water for only 2 or 3 minutes and finishes the dish by adding marinara sauce, grated cheese, parsley, butter, olive oil, and a touch of pasta water. He tosses it all together in a large stainless steel bowl.
If you're mixing in a bowl, this will feed a crowd. You'll make some new neighbors, new friends.
Dried pasta is a hurricane staple Jeff Houck recommends. The Florida native and food writer is marketing director for Local Market.
That is shelf stable for a very long time. A little bit of pasta, a little bit of water, and throw some herbs on it and you're done.
Houck says there are hurricane food options even for families on a tight budget.
Something like rice, which is affordable. Adding a few canned vegetables to rice and a little bit of chicken stock and you have almost like a borderline pilaf. It's not about being fancy, it's about suiting your needs.
Houck's go-to comfort food after a hurricane when there's no electricity, s'mores, graham crackers, chocolate, and marshmallows, toasted over his outdoor grill. For Florida Matters, I'm Bobby O'Brien in St. Petersburg.
And that's it for today's show. You can find more resources to help you prepare for hurricanes at WUSFnews.org. Florida Matters is produced by Lottie Watts and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.